Once upon a time. This is a kind of once upon a time story. Except that the story is true.
The World in Words is made possible in part by the National Endowment for the Humanities, celebrating 50 years of excellence, and by PRI's The World.
Once upon a time, there was a group of people in Russia who decided that the Orthodox Church wasn't for them. They were Christians. They just didn't like all of the icons and the rituals. And they were opposed to war. They called themselves the Doukhobors. This was a few hundred years ago. The Tsars who ruled Russia, they didn't like the Doukhobors much. So they tried to eliminate them, not by killing them, but by forcing them to assimilate and by exiling them to the edges of the Russian Empire. It didn't work. The Doukhobors hung on to their beliefs and their principles, which came to a head when they refused to serve in the Imperial Army. That was the last straw. So in 1897, the Russian government struck a deal with the Doukhobors. They were permitted to leave the country on condition that it was forever. They went to Canada. Most of them settled in British Columbia. Now, if you think that the Canadian government was any more sympathetic to the Doukhobors than the Russians were, well, think again. Doukhobor leaders were hounded, their land was confiscated, the government even tried to deport some of them. I should say here that not all the Doukhobors were practicing the pacifism that their doctrine preached. There'd been bombings and arson attacks. But when the government in Canada did start acting like the Russians before them, trying to destroy the Doukhobors' culture, how do you think they responded? They took their clothes off. That was a preferred form of protest. Mass public nudity. Decades later, folk singer Malvina Reynolds wrote a song about this. Pete Seeger sang it.
There's a new tactic to use, my dear. If you have a protest no one wants to hear, just attend a rally where the big shots meet. Strip to your hide and walk down the street. Up in Canada, Doukhobor lads were sent to public schools disapproved of by their dads. So the Doukhobor women said, that's enough. They went to the meeting in the buff. Do as the Doukhobors do.
This may have been the Doukhobors' only brush with popular culture.
If government policy gets on your nerves and no one pays attention to you, throw away your dresses and your lingerie too and do as the Doukhobors do.
Now, when they came from Russia, they, of course, brought their language with them. It's a dialect, really, of Russian. And it still exists today in their choral music. An old dialect preserved in song only. What happened to the way that the Doukhobors spoke? And what do they speak now? Here's Alina Simone.
Arriving at the airport in Castlegar, British Columbia, it almost feels as though you've mysteriously crossed the ocean and touched down in Russia, or at least some alternative version of it. The airport coffee shop sells tarts with various filling called pirahi and borscht, traditional Doukhobor borscht. Just across the street lies the Doukhobor Discovery Center, where you can walk through the kind of sprawling brick communal home the Doukhobors once lived in. In the middle of it all stands a statue of Leo Tolstoy, donated by Russia. Tolstoy helped pay their passage to Canada at the turn of the last century. In Russian, the word Doukhobors translates to the spirit wrestlers. In the West, they were known as the Russian Quakers, though they weren't Quakers. After centuries of persecution by the Russian Tsar, the Doukhobors came to Canada from parts of the Russian Empire, hoping to preserve their religion, their pacifist philosophy, and their communal lifestyle.
Cradled by the Rocky Mountains, this valley was once the center of the largest communal living experiment in North American history. 80 villages, 6,000 people, all fiercely religious, clinging to their native language and rejecting the trappings of the modern world.
The Canadian government put an end to that communal living experiment decades ago, as this made-for-Canadian TV documentary shows. They banned the communal ownership of land and turned the Doukhobors into Canadian citizens. Today, the Doukhobors have embraced the trappings of the modern world. iPhones, Netflix, puffy jackets. But the language they all used to speak is turning into an antique. Less a part of conversation than a conversation piece.
I know one of our favorites, and we all laugh about it, is Halotia.
This is Lisa Posnikov, the Discovery Center's administrator.
We greet each other with a big smile, a grin, and we say, Halotia. It's slang. You know, basically it's slang, but, you know, it gets included in the dialect.
The Russian that the Doukhobors started off speaking in the 1600s became a kind of linguistic lint roller, picking up diverse influences as they were exiled to places like Ukraine, Georgia, and Turkey. The language almost becomes a story of their exile, which you can read in phrases like very good, дуже хорошо, which combines the words very in Ukrainian and good in Russian. Lisa grew up speaking Doukhobor Russian, but lost it later.
As a preteen, I wasn't interested in learning the Russian again. I'm, you know, making friends, socializing, things like that. So I just didn't pick it up again.
It's a familiar story. Children of the modern era aren't interested in old world languages. But language is important to the Doukhobors for a couple of reasons. For one thing, it's an oral culture. Their Bible, history, constitution, and pacifist philosophy are enshrined in hundreds of songs and prayers. Here's a part of a New Year's blessing.
Господи, благослови. Новый год бежит, во яслих лежит.
I'm a native Russian speaker, and maybe three quarters of these words are familiar. The rest, I have no idea. The Doukhobors have been moved from place to place for hundreds of years. As Pete Evdokimov, a Doukhobor and a former Russian teacher, explains, there's a parallel in Canada.
Quebec French, where 300 years ago, they brought their French with them to Canada. And at the end of the 19th century, we brought our Russian with us into Canada.
Canada was supposed to be the Doukhobors' final refuge, but the government grew increasingly suspicious of their communal culture, their refusal to fight for Canada, and their Slavic roots, especially during the Cold War. The communal Doukhobor residence here at the Discovery Center in Castlegar is actually a replica. The real villages all burned down decades ago, some torched intentionally in protest by members of a radical Doukhobor sect after their children were seized by Canadian Mounties, the RCMP, and sent off to be forcibly assimilated at a boarding school hundreds of miles away.
By the time it ended, the RCMP raid scooped up 174 Doukhobor children from their homes. All of them became wards of the province.
They held the children there, just like they did to the native children, some of them for 7 years, never permitted to go home, not even for holidays or family funerals or anything like that.
Even for those who remained, like Flo Hadkin, a Doukhobor who went to school here during the 50s, the language began to disappear.
We were not allowed to speak Russian language. If the teacher found out or she heard us speaking in Russian, you would get punished.
By the 1960s, with the number of native Doukhobor speakers in steep decline, a group of concerned parents lobbied the local school board to add Russian to the district curriculum. And they won, but they also faced a dilemma. What kind of Russian to teach? The Doukhobor dialect, or the standard Russian spoken in the country their great-grandparents had fled?
It was a conscious choice by the committees that brought in to contemporary standard Russian.
This is former Russian teacher Pete Evdokimov again.
I don't get as much use out of my Doukhobor dialect than a contemporary standard Russian. I just don't. Doukhobors, I think on whole, except for maybe the odd one, have realized that we are no longer living in a bubble.
Now they saw themselves as part of Russia's far-flung diaspora and reestablished ties with their homeland. Even though they hadn't been able to get along with the Tsar, they found support among the Soviets. And from the 60s to the 80s, they received the majority of their teaching materials from communist Russia.
Because of the positive cultural ties with the old Soviet Union, a lot of young people were allowed to go and study contemporary standard Russian coming out of our community at a time when it was difficult for the average scholar to go to Russia.
Some of those young people have gone on to become teachers in the local Russian bilingual program. 15-year-old Annika Sheveldave, a fifth-generation Dukhobor, has been studying in the program since kindergarten, a fact that surprises other Canadian kids.
Whatever, they're like, what? Your school does Russian class? Like, people that live near here only expect there to be English and French. And so when they hear Russian, they're kind of like, oh, like, they offer Russian. Like, that's kind of cool, like, in a way.
There are, however, scholars who question whether one can really be a Dukhobor without understanding the dialect, even though much doctrine has been translated into English. And there are those who fear that it's just not enough, that the Dukhobor preteens will, in the end, choose socializing over learning Russian, of whatever form. But Pete Evdokimov believes that language was never the thing binding the Dukhobors together. It was all about their credo, toil and peaceful life.
The bond was the faith and the cultural times.
And on the day I visited the Dukhobor prayer home for their 69th annual youth festival, the place was bustling. Men in suits and women in kerchiefs, piling tables high with vegetarian dishes. Granted, many were older, especially for a youth festival, but word was a new family in town, non-Dukhobors, non-Russian speakers, had just asked to join the congregation. At the turn of the last century in America, the Jews arrived with their Yiddish, the Italians with their Italian, the list goes on. Today, how many of those kids still speak those languages? But here in Castlegar, 116 years later, the Dukhobors are still singing their language, for the time being.
Alina Simone is based, usually, in New York. She took a bunch of photos while she was in British Columbia. You can see them at pri.org/language. You can also get there via Facebook, there's a World in Words page, or on Twitter, we're at LingoPod. I'm at Patry Cox, PatriCox. Don't forget to review us at iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for that, and thank you for listening. We'll be back soon.
But up there in Canada, 20 below, people generally cover up from head to toe. Kennedy would send a cup of coffee or two if we did as the Dukhobors do.
The World in Words is made possible in part by the National Endowment for the Humanities, celebrating 50 years of excellence, and by PRI's The World.
Throw away your dresses and your lingerie too, and do as the Dukhobors do.